Hey guys, how's it going? Well, good. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Welcome to it. Lots and lots of news to cover today, and a couple of interviews with our very best regulars, Gareth Porter and Phil Giraldi, will be on the show here. Now, you knew you were being lied to this whole time about Iran-backed Houthis, Iran-backed Houthis. Everything the Houthis do, that's because that's what Iran wants, and that's why you should be really upset about it. Do you watch TV? That's what they say on TV. The Houthis, they're the guys who are waxing, not waning, in Yemen right now, but being bombed by the Saudis with American support. And anyway, so Gareth is here to debunk for us. Gareth Porter, the great debunker of things that aren't true. Oh yeah, this is the one I was looking for right here. Okay. Phil Giraldi, he's going to be here. He's got a couple of interesting topics to discuss with us, including why the Pope should denounce the government of the United States of America and its foreign policy. All right. It's a little bit outside of my purview, but Giraldi ends with a vowel, so he can speak about these things. What the Pope ought to do and what he ought not to do. Personally, I would appreciate more denunciations of American foreign policy by anybody and everybody all the time. So that would include the Pope. And, you know, John Paul said, oh, I don't know if this Iraq thing is a good idea. But he could have been a lot more outspoken than that. And Lord knows American Catholics might have in droves chosen the state before God, because they're apt to do such things, you know, conservatives. But anyway, would have been better, I think, for his legacy, if nothing else. What would you do if you were a pope and the Republicans were lying us into war with Iraq? Wouldn't you say, hey, I'm invoking my full scale of popiness to tell you better knock it off? That's what I would say. Anyway, so Phil's going to be on to talk about that and some other things. You know, like the influence of the Israeli government in the American government. War and religion. Yeah, it's all kind of one big discussion, isn't it? And to be mentioned, this article by Glenn Greenwald, religious fanaticism is a huge factor in American support for Israel. And he's got these poll results for us. So we'll be talking about all that with Phil Giraldi, too. And now on to the big news, the foreign policy news real quick before the police state news. And that is that Barack Obama has killed innocent American hostages held by Al-Qaeda in Pakistan with a drone attack. The White House named Dr. Warren Weinstein, that's how they were pronouncing it on TV, an American held by the terror group since 2011, a 70-something-year-old man, and Giovanni Laporto, an Italian national, who had been a hostage of Al-Qaeda since 2012. And in January, they killed him, and then they found out later, oops, there were hostages there. I like how Cade Crockford from the ACLU, a Twitterer, wrote, Obama, our drone strikes are precise and based off of excellent intel. Oops. We killed your dad. Sorry, we didn't know he was there. And Obama himself came out and said he took quote-unquote full responsibility. You know, we need a new term for that. The Janet Reno style, take full responsibility. I take full responsibility, meaning I take no responsibility. There'll be no consequences for anyone, especially me. That's what that means. I take full responsibility. Okay, bye. I'm going to lunch now. And anyway, so, yeah, that's just how that goes, right? Collateral damage. These things happen. Everybody knows that. Mistakes can occur. It was the fog of war. We were pretty sure that they weren't there. Sometimes we get it wrong. Those are the breaks. And then, the other thing was, and here's how they try to cover up for it. Get this. The positive spin on this is they also supposedly killed Adam Gadon. Two other Americans. Ahmed Farouk. Oh, screw him with a name like that, right? But the other guy's name was Adam Gadon. Adam, well, that sounds like maybe a white guy's name. Jewish white guy, I think from California, right? Same guy. And Adam Gadon, they were both members of Al-Qaeda, but as it says here in ABC News, their political alibi is neither was specifically targeted. You know, we were just out killing Al-Qaeda guys, and they happened to be there, so too bad for them. Which, if that was true, eh. But I don't necessarily think that that's true. Do you? Just because they say so? Then again, I guess Obama would be happy to take credit for deliberately targeting and killing Adam Gadon. Why not? He openly took credit for targeting and killing Anwar al-Awlaki. Now, they hid and said Samir Khan, who was with him, both American citizens killed by an Obama drone in Yemen in, what, 2012, I guess. Ooh. And then 2 weeks later, they killed his 16-year-old son and called it a mistake. Although, actually, the current head of the CIA, John Brennan, at the time, said he was suspicious of the CIA's account. He was working directly for Obama then as, I don't know what, Director of National Intelligence? I forget then. No, he wasn't Director of National Intelligence. He was just Obama's counterterrorism advisor in the White House. And he said he was suspicious. He was on the record saying he was suspicious of the FBI's, the CIA's claim that it was a mistake when they killed Awlaki's son. But in all cases, they invoked that Janet Reno responsibility. Oh, yeah, I take responsibility, meaning no responsibility. If anything, their opposition in Congress, who actually can enforce their responsibility for such crimes, are worse than them on every foreign policy, everything. Every horrifying sin that Obama has committed, in Rand Paul's words, the Republicans would do 10 times over. They only object that Obama isn't bad enough. It's all they ever have to say. And so those are the only ones who can hold him accountable, so forget that. And in fact, that's the quote here from David Weigel, quoting Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham, "The people in Guantanamo Bay are probably going to die in jail. And that's okay with me," said Senator Lindsey Graham, a former JAG attorney. So it's not like he's just some idiot. He is some idiot, but not just some idiot. And the thing about him is, because of his background, you can take to the bank that he knows good and well that the majority, I believe the vast majority of the people still held at Guantanamo Bay have been cleared for release by the Defense Department, by the Obama Administration Task Force, which is made up of military and intelligence officials and whoever else. He knows that. That's why George Bush released 500 and something of these guys. They're just props. They're just Afghan goat herders or whoever were rounded up for bounties, betrayed by their neighbors, and sold to the Americans. Hey, Al Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm me. It's the thing here that I do. Coming up, Gareth Porter to debunk lies about Yemen. Phil Giraldi to debunk lies about all kinds of other things, too, man. You know, who knows? It'll be a lot of fun. All right, so I got a ton of information to get through here for you. Nope, got to save that. Okay, so the big breaking story today, supposedly kind of thing, is it's more another big story out of this new book about the money to the Clinton Foundation and the foreign policy decisions that highly coordinate to the money that were being made by the Hillary Clinton State Department at the time. This one is about a Russian company buying, controlling stake in an American uranium company. Which, you know, whatever. I'm for that, actually, you know? Oh, we can't nuke the Americans. We would lose access to our supply of uranium we need for our nukes, right? We need these kind of incentive structures built in to our policy of mutually assured destruction. Why not? The more interdependent we are, economically speaking, the more incentive our governments have to not get into wars with each other. You know, all things being equal. But anyway, so, and this one, they needed State Department approval for it, and you know what? Who knows if Hillary called them and said, yeah, pay me. Give me the money. Like in Goodfellas where Jimmy the Gent wraps the phone cord around the guy's neck and starts hitting him in the head with the telephone. Give me the money. Pay me. Who knows if she did that or not? They know how business is done. What you do, you give to her foundation. That's my Russian pretend accent for you there. Give to a foundation. They don't have articles. Give to foundation. So, they're just greasing the skids, man. They're just getting work done. And, interesting point I saw on the Twitter was, why do liberals want 4 or 8 years of just permanent scandal with this woman? Is this really the best the Democrats can do? And, of course, the answer to that is, yeah. That's the best that they can do. No, I don't know. Maybe there's a Democrat governor out there. There's a guy named O'Malley that I don't know anything about him other than that his name is O'Malley. Don't even know his first name. Don't know what he's the governor of, but I heard that he's a governor and that he's going to maybe try to run against her. I thought Jim Webb might be interesting to see how he does it. And then one of the first things he does is come out and attack the Iran deal. Shut up, Jim Webb, you stupid idiot. The one thing you might have been good for, you dumb ass. All right, anyway, now, straight on to the police state section. Okay, I'm not going to dwell on this. I swear I'm not going to. But I want you to know that there's a two-part thing with our guest from last Friday, Roger Charles, co-author of the book on the Oklahoma City bombing called Oklahoma City, What the Investigation Missed and Why It Matters. And here he's got an article at Who, What, Why. It's called Oklahoma City Bombing Breakthrough, Part 1 of 2 and Part 2 of 2, too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this could be 100,000-part essay here. There's so much, and I'm not going to sit here and go over all of Oklahoma City to you. But the point is, just like I've been telling you since, 1996, I guess, it was the Nazis that did it, and the government let them get away with it because they were all FBI informants and or state's witnesses, and because the ATF and the FBI had all the prior knowledge in the world to stop the attack, and they failed to because they suck, and that's the nicest interpretation. The more dangerous one is that Andre Carl Strassmeyer was deliberately sent to provoke this thing into action, and then they failed, or maybe the whole thing was a success, if you want to be as extreme about it as you can. But anyway, a whole lot of people died. They sure exploited it like they meant to all along, so you tell me, I don't know. But go read Roger Charles at Who, What, Why, the Oklahoma City bombing. I don't care if it's been 20 years. It's still the biggest deal in the whole wide world, and it's going to stay the biggest deal. So there. Okay, now Marcy Wheeler at exposefacts.org. She's got a thing here about Jeffrey Sterling. DOJ claims grossly disparate treatment will promote respect for the law. Okay, well, that's crazy. But anyway, the point is that David Petraeus gets away with blue bloody murder, leaking top secret war secrets and intelligence secrets to Paula Broadwell. What is, am I living in a novel or something where that's the name of the whore that that's writing his hagiography? Broadwell, really? And anyway, it's the least of his crimes. The man murdered a million people and lost two wars. Oh, hundreds of thousands. And lost two wars. But anyway, he leaked a bunch of secrets to his mistress. And he's getting away with that, just probation. But meanwhile, Jeffrey Sterling was a whistleblower who, it's not like he got paid by the New York Times. Who knows if it's even true that he did it? I mean, their evidence against him was a bunch of crap, as you heard Marcy Wheeler explain on this show in the past. But anyway, this guy Sterling, he leaked the secret of a very important and highly flawed secret op to try to frame the Iranians for holding on to nuclear weapons plans. And really, it was just a fire set. It's not really a complete plan for a nuclear warhead, but it was the fire set. But it had obviously flawed, well, we can't give them a perfect blueprint because then that'd be going too far, guys. So instead of just not doing it, they said, well, we'll give them a flawed blueprint. And then anyway, the whole thing was a joke. And the Iranians saw it for what it was, which was an attempted, you know, covert op to sting them. And they just threw it in the trash. Apparently, no one ever saw it again. The IAEA certainly never found it in their files or anything like that. And the whole thing was, you know, basically just a very dangerous scam where the CIA was, you know, attempting to give easily correctable, quote unquote, flawed fire set blueprints for use in an atomic bomb to the Iranians just to frame them. Just to make work for themselves. And anyway, so Sterling is, the government wants him to go to jail for 20 years for this. Upwards of 19 years, Marcy writes. 235 to 293 months. But here's the part that's killing me, man. Check this out. Most importantly, this is a quote. Check it out. This is a quote from the prosecutor's paperwork against Jeffrey Sterling. Again, the CIA whistleblower who told the story of Operation Merlin to James Risen of the New York Times, which buried it, the New York Times buried it until Risen published it in his book. Most importantly, for sentencing disparity purposes, the defendant exercised his right to a jury trial. That's even the way they frame it. He ought to get more time for demanding a jury trial. The judge said the same thing about the teachers busted in Florida. Is that a thing, really? More time for demanding a trial? You get a harsher sentence for making them find you guilty? Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code SCOTT when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Now, obviously, one of the main reasons I'm good on everything is because I got Gareth Porter's phone number, and he's such a great journalist. God dang it. He won the Gellhorn Award for all his work on David Petraeus's night raids in Afghanistan, the giant, bogus, failed surge, mass murder campaign. And he wrote the book on Iran's nuclear program, Manufactured Crisis, The Untold Story of the Iran Nuclear Scare. He has a hell of an archive at ipsnews.net and at antiwar.com, and is now writing for Middle East Eye. The latest is Houthi Arms Bonanza Came from Saleh, Not Iran. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing, Gareth?
I'm doing fine, Scott. Thanks again.
Good to have you here. So the latest from Fox News is that the Iranian 9-ship convoy, which they acknowledge are smaller than destroyers, has decided to turn around and apparently head back to Iran, or at least that direction, because they were scared away by the USS Theodore Roosevelt, a.k.a. the Big Stick, reports Fox News. So they're no match for us.
This is the story that is made in U.S. media heaven, isn't it, really?
Yeah, well, apparently they were up to no good, or else what were they doing there? What do you think?
Right. I mean, this is the mega media story that everyone loves to talk about, particularly on television. That there's this naval confrontation going on. It takes me back to 2009, January 2009, when, you know, the last time this was the headline story on Iran, a near war in the Persian Gulf, in the Strait of Hormuz, mm-hmm. between U.S. and Iranian ships. So, I mean, that's just, you know, that's something that this caused me to bring to mind. But I mean, this is the story that they love. But you know, it's kind of it's part of a larger media narrative that, of course, reflects the Obama administration's narrative that you know, this story about Yemen is really all about proxy war, and the Houthis are nothing more than the Iranian proxy in that war. So. I mean, that's why this story, I think, has gotten such, you know, it has been so reverberating through the media as part of a larger narrative that everyone is totally committed to.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, so your article here at Middle East Eye takes on a bit more narrower topic, which is about the actual arms and weapons. But in this Fox News story, the way they put it is simply Iran backs the Houthi rebels. So what's the truth in that? Because, I don't know. Why not?
Well, first of all, I mean, you know, if you really look at the history of the Houthi movement, you know, they have gotten to where they are today on their own. I mean, they clearly have acquired the a large army and weaponry, not because of any foreign involvement, not because of the Iranians supporting them, but because they fought a series of wars over a 10-year period with the Yemeni government, the Yemeni military. And in the process, they continued to grow and continued to acquire more arms. And of course, the way they acquired the arms was within Yemen itself, from the black market, on one hand, and as I point out in my article, The Yemeni arms black market is certainly one of the largest in the world, if not the largest. I mean, the estimate is 40 to 60 million arms floating around in Yemen. Some of them, of course, more sophisticated than others. And so that's been one of the major sources, but they've also clearly benefited from the largesse that has been bestowed on them by various commanders over the years who were corrupt and who essentially sold their weapons to the Houthis. This is a well-established part of the history. But then, you know, I mean that's the period from roughly 2004 to 2014. And then, you know, a whole new chapter opens up, of course, as the Houthis make an alliance with former President Mohammed Saleh. This is the part of the story that is really the spectacular change in the fortunes of the Houthis in terms of arms. And this is the part of the story that, to my astonishment, I mean, you know, the U.S. news media, the world news media, essentially is talking about the Iranian arming of the Houthis without referring to the fact that the Houthis have acquired arguably hundreds of millions of dollars of modern new American weapons over the past year from their alliance with Saleh.
Well, and never even mind that. I mean, that's, you know, to them really inside baseball. But what about just a couple of weeks ago, it was a major headline that the Americans had bugged out of there and left all kinds of equipment at their own base there. Millions and millions, I don't know how many zeros on it, but millions of dollars worth of weapons and other equipment that they left behind just when they skedaddled out of
there. There were reports about the Americans having to leave behind some weaponry, but that would be far smaller, much smaller, than the $500 million worth of arms that were bestowed on the Yemeni military over the last 6 years.
Right.
Eight years, from 2006 to 2014, and which, you know, large parts of which, most of which, arguably, fell into the hands of the Houthis over the past several months, from September 2014 to the present.
Yeah, it's funny, except for how tragic it is, if you go back to Jeremy Scahill's article in The Nation about Yemen policy backfiring. I forgot exactly what it is, but Scahill, Yemen, and backfire are the search terms for it anyway. And in that, it's all about how the U.S. gave Saleh all this money in the name of fighting al-Qaeda, which,
right,
of course, just made it in his interest to not fight al-Qaeda or to you know, basically allow them to grow so that he has more excuse to get more money and more weapons later, which instead he was using on his other enemies like the Houthis. And that's the war that you're talking about, was the Americans had given him all of this stuff that he was using against them. And then, as you say, they kept winning and kept growing stronger and stronger, and then ended up with all the equipment and co-opting the major parts of the army, and then making a deal with Saleh after the Americans betrayed him and ran him out. Well, and basically allowed the people of Yemen to run him out of office in 2011 and 12. And so now here we are. It's basically just like in Iraq, fighting the Islamic State, driving around in our Humvees that we gave to the Iraqi army to keep them down with.
Right. And here again, I mean, the bottom line, I mean, the fundamental point of all of this is that the United States national security state is so far, they're over their head in this. In this situation, I mean, they have no idea what's really going on. They've been played over and over again. They're like kids, in a very dangerous situation where they have no idea what the consequences of their actions are going to be. And the lesson is that you know, the United States simply is incapable of intervening in these places without making things a total mess, and essentially frustrating the interests that are supposed to be served by the intervention.
Yep. All right. Well, music's playing, so hold it right there. Amazing. The timing actually worked out for once here. I'm not going to blow this break. We'll be right back with the great Gareth Porter in just a minute, guys. Check him out at MiddleEastEye.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here, and I'm so excited about Commodity Discs from CommodityDiscs.com. They're one-ounce silver pieces with a QR code engraved on the backside. Scan the code with your phone and get the instant spot price. Commodity Discs are paving the way forward for the alternative currency community in America and around the world. The QR code Commodity Disc. Technology has now finally made a real free market silver currency viable. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one free. That's CommodityDiscs.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Talking with Gareth Porter about all the hype about Iran backing the Houthis in Yemen, which has America backing the Saudis in their war against them. And now I'm a bit confused because it seems like the Saudis were declaring victory, even though, of course, they hadn't changed the regime back to Hadi or anything like that. But they seem like they were trying to quit. And then the White House came out and criticized them and said, obviously, the job isn't done yet. And they started bombing some more, or I don't know, maybe they were bombing anyway. But at the same time, had Mark Perry on the show, and he was saying that yesterday, and he was saying that the military are totally against this thing. The Americans want to see an end to this thing as quickly as they can. It's the Americans are supporting it kind of as a sop to the allies, maybe. Oh, I guess this was Daniel Harrison was saying it's kind of a sop to the allies because we're making this nuclear deal with Iran that, like, well, here, we'll kind of help you kill Yemenis for a little while if that's the compromise. Something, but I think they want this thing over. But then, yeah. So anyway, so riddle me this, huh?
I think that's absolutely right, that the essentially the U.S. government is not enthusiastic at all about the Saudis' bombing campaign. They know that it's going to simply create more support for the Houthis. It's going to weaken any claim that they might have for forces that will fight against them. And so it's a losing proposition. You know, clearly this is the beginning of what the Saudis intend to be a long war. They have some former Yemeni military, but Yemeni military who were taken over, in theory, by the new Houthi-dominated government, but who've now declared their fealty to the government in exile in Riyadh. So there are some thousands, at least, of troops, perhaps tens of thousands of troops, who are prepared, at least according to some reports, to fight on behalf of the Saudi-backed regime in exile. But clearly the vast majority of the effective troops now in Yemen are supporting the present regime, which is this odd concatenation of the Houthis plus former President Saleh and his people in the military. And, of course, Saleh supposedly was ousted in 2012, had to step down in 2012 and give up his position of power over the military, but that really never happened. He continued to control essentially the entire Yemeni military, and that's why the Yemeni state was never really united, never really fully under the control of this government that was being backed by the Saudis, the Gulf Cooperation Council, and the United States, and why the Houthis were basically invited by Saleh to come in and take power in September 2014.
Well, and so what's his official position now? He's back, or he's in the back waiting?
Yeah, he's in the background. He's pulling the strings.
But he's not, the official. They got another guy as their official leader at this point in right. the capital.
Yep. Yep.
All right. And then, so now there was a drone strike supposedly targeting Al-Qaeda in Mukalla. But at that point, at this point, that sounds like it's just an alibi for actually flying as their Air Force right now.
No, I suspect they're still continuing their drone war. And now, as you may have seen, the U.S. drone war is based essentially on obviously just satellite, not satellite, but the drones following things from the sky. And essentially pattern of behavior strikes. In other words, they have no more, they don't get any more intelligence from the Yemeni government, obviously. So it's all based on patterns, it's pattern strikes, circumstantial evidence. And I'm, you know, I'm not suggesting that the intelligence that they had before was any better, but now it's very explicit that it's all based on simply assumptions, inferences from patterns that they see from the drones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they. I wonder if they hired Madison Avenue to come up with signature strikes, which
signature
sounds
strike.
Like it implies that somebody with authority had to sit down and check very carefully before he put his signature on it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Obama put his signature on it one at a time, very, you know, like they say, a scalpel rather than a hammer and that kind of thing. But
well,
no,
but
it just means
using,
that they're killing random people for walking around with a rifle or driving a pickup truck
yeah,
twice.
Yeah, more than three people in one place with a rifle, which
yeah.
would constitute evidence, I think. But yeah, they're using the term signature here, obviously, to mean, you know, something.
No, not obviously. Only if you look at it.
Yeah, right.
To
okay,
everybody I'm else, it sounds, I mean, I don't know, maybe just to me, it sounds like they're implying a level, a higher level of care rather than a lower one.
Yeah,
you know
one
I mean?
Could one could imagine that this meant that somebody signed off on it.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, but so yeah, somebody did, but the qualification for killing was basically nothing.
Exactly.
Maybe he had a SIM card, the wrong SIM card. Anyway, well, so now, what about? I'm curious about what you think about what Mark Perry was saying about the generals. That, you know, they clearly were against the war against Assad in 2013. And here they're going along with it, obviously, because what are they going to do? But they're supposedly grumbling and throwing Obama under the bus for taking the side of Al-Qaeda in this one. Do you think that even though the you know, political strategy and all this Middle East stuff is so muddled that actually in the Pentagon they're looking at it and being a little bit more rational about whose side America is fighting on or should be?
See, that's the interesting thing about the Pentagon in the national security state in the post 9/11 period, or shall we say the post, let's say the post Iraq war period. The Pentagon really is not interested in more wars. I mean, that much is become clear. I mean,
oh yeah, I could have thrown in Libya there in my question. They
Libya,
were against that too.
Syria. The Pentagon was not in favor of war in Syria, although perhaps the Air Force was. It's possible. I mean, I wouldn't doubt that there are elements of the Air Force which would be enthusiastic, as they were in Iraq. But generally speaking, the civilian leadership and the Joint Chiefs of Staff have been extremely wary of U.S. wars in the Middle East, that is conventional wars. Now, so what does that mean? What are they really all about then in the Middle East? They are about keeping control over facilities, a massive network of military facilities, both Army and Navy, as well as Air Force in the Middle East, and special programs like Special Operations Forces, and other things that involve specific operations that are not going to be aimed at sort of regime change specifically, but which essentially, you know, keep the money rolling in for programs that are favored by a particular interest in the Pentagon. So I think, you know, more and more we see here an institution or set of institutions that are operating, you know, clearly like a corporation, which is, you know, looking to maintain its assets, to preserve its assets, and to invest in those programs that will bring in more money, more power, more prestige.
Hey, let me ask you this.
And avoid those things that are going to have the opposite effect.
Does that amount to a willingness to let the Islamic State continue to exist indefinitely now?
Well, no. First of all, they know they're not going to be able to succeed in preventing the Islamic State from existing, so that's not the issue. The issue is, are they interested in all-out war against the Islamic State? Certainly not. Are they interested in specific airstrikes, which keep the idea alive that they have a role to play militarily in the Middle East, and continue, you know, the legal apparatus that continues to pour money into the war accounts in the Pentagon budget, which can be used then for various other purposes as well. So all of that is very favorable to the interests of the Pentagon, without their having to, or you know, without requiring that they actually become involved in a war which, you know, they recognize is going to be big trouble for them.
Yeah. Now, okay, so, but I think, okay, so I would argue that if they sent in a George Bush-style invasion to the Islamic State and to rouse these guys out of Mosul, something like that, that we know that we got the firepower to do that. We've seen it happen before, and they could turn the Islamic State back into an insurgency. And then the next step from that would be when they got to leave someday again, then we'd have something like the Islamic State probably come back, something like that.
Well,
but I don't think you would argue that that's what they're saying, that they would agree with me that they have really no ability to undo what they've done here at this point. I mean,
I am quite certain that they realize that they don't have the ability to really eliminate the Islamic State. It's too big, it's too broad, it's too widespread. If you were to go into Mosul with whatever, you know, how many thousand troops it would require and all the air power and so forth, you're going to play whack-a-mole again. You're back to the old game, you know? I mean, we've been there before. It was called Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not called that anymore. That's the thing. But, you know, hey, I'm cool with it. Whatever. It's their fault for making it this way, Bush and Obama and their administrations and whatever, too. So it is what it is, and I'm not favoring any more intervention, obviously. But I'm just... I guess I still am amazed at their reluctance to, try to do more. Because obviously, nobody in the region can do it except maybe the Turks, and they're not interested in invading and getting rid of them.
But part of this situation is one has to view it as a repeat of some of the same phenomena that we saw after Vietnam. I mean, you know, the U.S. military was, after Vietnam, was in a period of retreat and rebuilding and rethinking because of the failure and the extreme, you know, damage to the military that was caused by the Vietnam War. Now, it's not exactly the same, obviously. It's a much more complex picture today, because of all of the minor wars that the military is involved in one way or another. But at the same time, I think you do still have a situation where they are, they're snake bit by Iraq in particular and Afghanistan as well. Fearful of being sent into yet another conflict where they would suffer damage to the reputation and to the institution of the military. So that's part of the picture, for sure. That goes along with, you know, the other side that is continuing to take advantage of opportunities to carry out operations which will not go into the red from their point of view in terms of damage to their basic infrastructure, to the assets that they have in the Middle East, and which will continue to bring in congressional appropriations that they can use.
Yeah, they are, after all, bombing the hell out of Iraq, I guess more than Syria, but Syria somewhat too. So
yeah.
I don't mean to downplay what they are doing, because they're bombing Iraq like ever, last 25 years straight, 24.
Yeah, and we, I mean, I'm not suggesting that they're in retreat to the same degree as they were in the 70s and into the, into 1980, but
I guess I was just thinking, Gareth, that look, when insane people like Barack Obama and John McCain are saying, let's bomb the Baathists in Syria, and the generals say, no, man, look, we don't want to fight a war directly on behalf of Al-Qaeda now, okay?
Right,
come on,
right.
Don't do this to us. Same kind of thing here in Yemen. Oh, man, we don't want to, but I guess, all right. You know, there was some reluctance here. Now, that's one thing, but bombing actual bin Ladenite types, it seemed like, would be much more up their alley. But you're saying they're just about as reluctant to take either side in this thing, you know, much more than they're already doing.
I think in the case of Yemen, beyond the drone strikes, I think they would find that problematic for a variety of reasons. Although, big difference between, you know, an air campaign, limited air campaign, and, limited for us, not for the Yemenis, okay?
Right.
And ground forces, which, you know, absolutely is, you know, outside the the comfort zone for sure.
Right. Okay, with that, I'll let you go. Thanks very much for your time. Sorry for keeping you overtime here, Gareth.
My
but I
pleasure,
appreciate
as
you.
Always. Thanks, Scott.
Okay, that's the great Gareth Porter, everybody. Houthi arms bonanza came from Saleh, a.k.a. the United States of America, his patron, not Iran. And we'll be right back with Phil Giraldi in just a minute. In America today, teachers, cops, judges, and other so-called public servants make far more than the average taxpayer. And their pensions? Well, if the people knew, they'd join us. That's where you come in. Taxpayers United of America is embarking on a great new project to train activists how to take on the parasites in your communities. The entire process, from prying loose the facts to disseminating the truth to the people. The next of these great workshops is Saturday, April 25th in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It's just $15. For more information, go to taxpayersunited.org/govpensions. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show. The Scott Horton Show on the Liberty Radio Network. Yes, my website is still broken. It's more broken than it was a couple of days ago again. I don't know, man. It'll be fixed at some point. But anyway, you can find me on Twitter. And I'm still here live on the weekdays and KPFK on Sunday mornings in L.A. Okay, good. War and religion. The Bible made me do it. That's one. That's at uns.com. The other is the Pope rebukes Turkey and should challenge America and Israel by both by Phil Giraldi, former CIA officer and writer for The American Conservative. That's the last one there. And uns.com again. Welcome back to the show, Phil. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Scott. How about you?
I'm doing good. Oh, I forgot to say executive director of the Council for the National Interest in Washington. Okay. Talk to me about the Pope here. The Pope rebukes Turkey, and that's over the old Ottoman genocide from right around this time 100 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the centenary of the start of the genocide, basically started in 1915 when the Russian Imperial armies invaded eastern Turkey. And the Armenians, it was suspected at the time, or perhaps it was invented at the time, that they were siding with the invaders, who were fellow Christians. So they became a convenient scapegoat and were basically marched en masse away from their homeland across a desert region, central Anatolia, and as many as 1.5 million of them might have died.
Wow. So that's kind of Andrew Jackson with exponents there, Huh?
Yeah, it's you know, certainly there are precedents in our own history of similar forced migrations of Indians, but nobody's worried about that one. They're worried about the one that was carried out by the Turks, because of course the Turks are they're Muslims, and so there's a religious kind of flavor to all of this.
Right. Yeah. Of course. And now. But so, I don't know, man, what's the big deal about just recognizing the thing? I mean, why such politics about this? Everybody agrees. I mean, if you're telling me with a straight face that, yeah, something on the order of a million point something died in this thing, that sounds like a genocide or an attempted one, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, in my article, I say that, you know, there's no doubt about it that a lot of the orders to carry this out came from top level Turks, among the young Turks and the Ottoman advisors. And there's no question but that it was genocidal in nature. I don't have a problem with that, except it seems to be something that they're digging out after 100 years to be playing politics with. I don't think that it's there's any clear humanitarian message here. And the objection I raise is the fact that here we have the Pope talking about something that occurred 100 years ago with a government that no longer exists, with people that no longer exist, and yet we have real life things like, for example, George W. Bush, who was met in private audience by Pope John Paul II 4 times without John Paul II ever saying anything to George Bush or refusing to meet him, which would have been even better, to send a signal that George Bush was kind of carrying out his own genocide.
Yeah, and he only had, I mean, he did, I guess, oppose the Iraq war, John Paul, but just barely, right? So, you know, I hope for peace or some kind
right.
of.
Right, yeah, it was that kind of language. So I'm basically saying here was a pope that genuinely, I think, is a revered individual for a lot of what he did, who basically, when confronted with the issue of confronting an American president for policies that were manifestly evil and were gravely damaging the Christian populations in the Middle East. And here all he does is come out with a mealy-mouthed, you know, comment about, oh, well, we oppose this fighting and so on and so forth. So he could have done a lot more. That was my point. And then I get into the point of, well, what about, you know, Israel? Why are Christian churches so reluctant to support BDS, which is boycott, divestment, and sanctions against particularly the West Bank Israeli colonies? Yeah. And then there's been a tepid response on the part of Christianity about this. And I said, gee, what would it be like if the Pope were actually to make a very firm comment about this, that Catholics should support BDS or some aspect of it? And again, it seems to me that there's politics in this and that where the Pope should be serving as a witness to this and making a moral statement, he's unwilling to do so.
Yeah, well, and this Pope Francis, he's more outspoken on all kinds of things than the last two popes, right? But just not on the American Empire?
Yeah, that's right. He is. But, you know, nevertheless, I guess it gives you the lesson that however much you want to regard a religion as some kind of moral force, basically any organized religion is actually political. And we're seeing the politics of this playing out in terms of what he thinks he can get away with saying and what he thinks he can't get away with saying. Because it's clear to anyone that these are major moral issues in terms of how the United States has devastated the Middle East. I'm sure you saw the story about a week ago where they're estimating now that 2 million people are dead as a result of the global war on terror. And nobody talks about that, and the Israeli policy on the West Bank and everything. Almost nobody agrees that there's some kind of moral basis for what they're doing there, or ethical basis. So these are clear cut issues, and yet we're not getting the kind of definitive comments from our moral leaders in the religious organizations.
Right. Yeah. In fact, Grant Smith is just pointing out a new study. Where Americans, I think 60-something percent, say that they don't agree with the current policy of the occupation in the West Bank, that kind of thing. And now, so, you know, it's confusing to me, especially with this current pope. I mean, John Paul was already so old. I mean, who knows what with him? I don't know. But with this current guy, it seems like if he would actually just make a case, right, not just, you know, make a statement, a small statement, but actually explain why this or that, you know, on a controversial issue like the war on terrorism or, you know, indefinite detention or or the occupation of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem, these kinds of things, that if he would explain, hey, look, this is why I think this and this is why it ought to be our official position, that could really make a big difference in the way people think about this. I mean, in I don't know how it is in Europe, but in America, the Protestant churches are so divided. There's like, you know, however many 25 different, you know, major branches of Protestantism. But on the Catholic side, that's a lot of people to kind of get with it at once. You know, it seems like if the Pope is promoting something like justice in a previously taboo area of discussion, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the way I see it. I mean, there are 80 million people who are nominally at least Catholic in the United States, and that's quite a big group. And the fact is, if, you know, the Pope were to take the lead, you know, you don't have to package this as an Israel bash or even as a United States bash. There are ways to finesse the issue, but to talk about it. And it just seems to me that this opportunity is sedulously avoided. It's easier to talk about Armenian genocide because it's 100 years old. And besides, Turks are Muslims. So it's the kind of message that comes across to me that I think is totally inappropriate, and it's why probably personally I felt I haven't been very religious for a long time, but I personally felt a complete dissociation with the Catholic Church when Pope John Paul II met with George W. Bush. I said this is just a betrayal of every value that I was brought up with as a Catholic. And I still feel that way.
Yeah, really is unfortunate that, you know, again, just the opportunity wasted. It's like Rand Paul, right? All that could be done, but then, it's the same frustration I feel when I listen to the radio, you know, tune in NPR or something, and it's just some nonsense, right? Like the most hard-hitting thing they'll talk about is promoting the next housing bubble or something, whatever. It's just, what a waste of bandwidth of, you know what I mean? Of radio spectrum.
It's like you know, my wife has the tendency to watch a channel, CBS News, in the morning, and they have
Charlie Rose, the PBS guy?
Charlie Rose is the moderator or whatever, and he looks at you with a steely gaze and he says, "We are now about to have some real news." And they use that phrase every day. So obviously some kind of consultant told them that this is a phrase you have to use to impress upon the people that they're getting real news. And, of course, it's all bullshit.
Yeah, it's just pictures of puppies. It's nonsense.
Yeah, it's about what the Kardashians are doing, about some guy who survived after having his leg eaten by a shark. You know, that's real news.
Yeah. Always with the sharks.
Yeah. Sharks are the victims of our media.
Yeah, you know,
if
the whole summer
anything, he's in the news.
Yeah, the whole summer of 2001 before the 9/11 attack, that was all I talked about was Gary Condit and the shark attacks, because there were a dozen. All right, well, anyway, so and now to the Protestant side of this. Actually, you know what, we're supposed to be on break, and they're screwing up, Phil, so I'm going to call them. So hang tight with us. We'll be right back.
Sure.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more war in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America Lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. and they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Robertson at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, guys. Well, I don't know if you were hearing all that, but had some technical difficulties here, but it's all right. I got Phil Giraldi on the line. He's a former CIA officer. Now he runs the Council for the National Interest, and he writes for UNS.com and TheAmericanConservative.com. We're talking about how the Pope ought to denounce the empire. It's not like he would need to even hedge that much. It's pretty much all wrong and based on all lies. And I don't know about we can all just get along, but we could certainly get along a hell of a lot better than we are with the way things are going. I think anyone could agree. And then so you have this other piece that's sort of along these same lines, but in a different way. War and Religion, Don't Tell Me the Bible Made Me Do It, here at UNS.com. And well, you start off here talking about Michelle Bachmann. And I got to admit, I'm a bit confused about the end times here, that she's saying that Barack Obama's refusal to kowtow to Israel is going to cause Jesus to come back, when I thought that we always had to kowtow to Israel in order to make Jesus come back was the whole scam here. So which is it, Phil?
I don't know. I mean, she's a little bit confusing, actually. I mean, I also point out that she's apparently studied Islamic holy texts and has determined that the Muslims have ever since the beginning been wanting to invent or get a nuclear weapon. That means, since these texts date from the 7th century, that means that they've been doing it for, you know, 1,400 years.
Hmm. Maybe she studied under Daniel Pipes or Frank Gaffney or
something. I suspect so, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you're right. She's a bit confused. She also said in the interview that she was just really looking forward to the fact that all this dissing of Israel and this love fest by Obama with Islamic terrorists is going to bring back the second coming of Christ much sooner, and that's something that she's really happy about. She's yet another American politician who wants the world to end.
Yeah. Well, at least she's optimistic either way, right? That if we're doing everything George Bush's way, that's helping to bring about the apocalypse. And if we do it Obama's way, then that's helping to bring about the apocalypse too, which is something that we can all look forward to.
That's probably due to her experience as a politician. She's willing to look at both sides of the issue. And fortunately, they both come out her way.
Oh, man. All right, so now... But listen, Michelle Bachmann, she's an easy target to use as a punching bag here. But does anyone agree with her, Phil, about any of this nonsense?
Yeah, that's what the rest of my article goes on to describe, how apparently there are quite a lot of Michelle Bachmanns out there. Because if you look at various developments, the Republican Party, which, of course, pretty much moves in lockstep with both Israel and the Christian Zionists, is essentially dedicated clearly to go to war with Iran. So I mean, this is the kind of consequence which probably a lot of Republican congressmen would not want to admit, or they don't really want that. They just want something, you know, to chew on. But the fact is that this is where it's going to lead. And then there was an opinion poll, a Bloomberg opinion poll, which essentially said that roughly half of the U.S. population, very heavily weighted in terms of Republicans, and especially those who describe themselves as evangelical or born again, these people by large margins basically want the United States to defer to Israeli interests in terms of what the United States does in the Middle East. In other words, turn over our foreign policy to them is okay with them.
That was a perfect bleep there with your phone there. It started with the F, and it could have been either one there, foreign or something else. Now, listen, it's not hyperbole, everybody. Wait, stop. I know that you're thinking, come on, Phil Giraldi, did they really say that? But that's really what they said was, quote, even if Israel's interests diverge from the United States, the Republicans said America should do what the Israelis want, not what's good for America.
That's what they said. And you know, admittedly, I pointed out that if you read the whole question, The whole question starts with Israel is our closest ally and friend and the only democracy in the Middle East. And then it goes into the question. So it's a loaded question the way it's set up. And I suspect that the question had been something different, like, should the United States go to war against Iran because Israel wants us to? The response, I think, could have been quite different.
Right.
But, you know, the problem is that the U.S. public has been fed this steady diet of propaganda and nonsense for years and years and years now, and it really doesn't know what's going on and probably doesn't really care. But the fact is that, you know, this kind of stuff is real dangerous. Just like when you and I have talked in the past about the policy in the Ukraine and with Russia, this stuff is dangerous. I mean, this is our nation's security. I hate to use that word, but our security in a very real sense, and the well-being of our people, and not sending our kids off to get killed in wars that make no sense, like we've been doing in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah. Now, and especially when you're talking about Russia, if they have one job in the world, it's keeping the peace with Russia. Even if we got to sacrifice Lithuania. Sorry, but you know what I mean? If the Russians, if the next president after Putin decides to call himself something more dictatorial than president and decides he's going to retake the Baltics, according to the current treaty situation, we would be obliged to get into a nuclear war with them, even if it meant the death of every last Lithuanian, in order to make sure that they guaranteed their independence from Russia was guaranteed. And so, I mean, I have to be that, to phrase it that ruthless, because that's the actual stakes, the way that the empire has set it up.
Yeah, that's right. And we have a lot of that to blame on Bill Clinton, who basically was the one that gave the green light to expanding into Eastern Europe, even after Gorbachev was promised that we wouldn't do that. And this has created this horrible situation where we're basically obligated to defend former parts of the Warsaw Pact against Russia. And Russia is the only country in the world that can destroy us. I mean, this is, you know, if you wanted to write a fiction novel and use this as a theme, nobody would believe it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because when I'm sure you read John Mearsheimer's piece about this in Foreign Affairs, and I interviewed him about it, and he said that, no, really, I know it might sound unbelievable. It's really all about interests and real things going on behind the scenes. But from his point of view, it was an academic exercise. Some academics believed that it's basically like just spreading the EU, you spread NATO too, and that keeps America's influence there, and it'll be fine, and the Russians won't mind. And it was basically, you know, it all came down to some stupid paper some guy wrote or something that everybody decided they agreed with. And then it turned out that it was actually a bad idea. And that, you know, it was basically as simple as that. Like, these guys basically thought all they were doing was, you know, making sure that their golf club could stay on the dole for the longer term, or whatever, and that there would be no consequences. That was really the argument of Strobe Talbot, and then the Russians will never misconstrue this as some kind of threat to them. How could they ever, when we don't mean it that way at all? And so it makes me wonder whether that's actually true. Maybe that's actually true. That rather than, you know, this much more, you know, hardline neocon wish to someday dismantle Russia or do a color-coded revolution there, something like that, that the men who actually expanded NATO really were just a bunch of, you know, guys with elbow patches and pipes and bright ideas, you know, without even, not even considering what Lockheed wants necessarily or anything like that. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, I suspect there could be a lot of truth to that, and certainly Mearsheimer is well enough placed to kind of be, you know, inside the system when that was happening. I wouldn't doubt that. But at the same time, let's not, you know, diminish the role of people like Wolfowitz and Victoria Nuland in terms of operating from inside the government to make this kind of stuff happen. This just didn't happen in a vacuum.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. And certainly when you're talking about, the latest crisis, but I don't know how much influence has she had going back on this. A lot.
Well, she's actually, well, she goes all the way back to Cheney. She was his foreign policy advisor.
Hmm.
So
I'd
we're
like
talking,
to,
you know, 2000.
Oh yeah, no. So yes, somebody, you or somebody ought to really look into that and see what was her role in in Bush's Eastern European policy and NATO expansion, specifically like in 2008 when they held that meeting where they talked about bringing Ukraine into NATO and Georgia too.
Yeah, and Georgia. I would suspect if we could get at the documents, which are probably classified, we would learn that a lot of these names are popping up here, there, and everywhere in terms of the discussions, in terms of the direction they should move in. I bet you.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so I'm sorry I kept you over time here, but one more thing, I guess, would be back to the question of the religiosity in all this here. It's sort of the state religion is all mixed up in it, too. And it seems like the bottom line here, Phil, is that the truth doesn't matter at all. That Americans can just be made to believe that, yeah, well, you know, war with Russia is inevitable. Or, yeah, well, you know, the only solution to the Middle East is just to turn the whole place to glass. Or whatever kind of, you know, bromides that people get subjected to time after time and year after year. That, you know, none of it has to have anything to do with reality. Even Rand Paul says the enemy is radical Islam when we're right in the middle of a regional civil war within, you know, a sectarian war within the Riyadh side and the Tehran side. But meanwhile, the enemy is all of them, even according to him. That's all anybody knows. And then if throw a little Jesus come back kind of magic on top and whatever that's enough to support any sort of policy that the Newlands and the rest of these idiots can make up for us, it seems like.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I see, to me, the scariest thing is the fact that you have this solid, wealthy, numerous, religious-oriented group that actually believes that the world should end, and sooner rather than later. And it's about time for the rest of us to stand up to this. I mean, we've had numerous Republican politicians who've taken the same position, although they don't quite verbalize it that way, but that's what they believe. And you've got this huge mass of Christians United for Israel and other evangelical groups that basically are on board of the same thing. This is what scares me. It's maybe time for the rest of us who don't want unnecessarily our world to end next week to stand up to them and expose them and talk about them.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing is, too, is it sounds so crazy. It sounds like maybe you're the crazy one or something. But no, really, they're there. And there's always indications here and there, Phil, and they don't ever get enough attention, but that our Air Force at the highest levels is run by these nuts, and including the Strategic Air Command, the guys with the bombers, the long-range nuclear bombers.
Yep. Yep.
And I understand nobody wants to die alone, but damn, we got to all die?
Yeah, I'm aware of that, the information about that, and as I'm sure you are. It's just, it's amazing. It's scary. It's beyond scary.
Yep. All right, that's Phil Giraldi, everybody. He's at the Council for the National Interest, UNS.com, and the American Conservative magazine at theamericanconservative.com. Thanks again, Phil.
Okay, Scott.
We'll be right back. Oh, we're back right now. That's the same thing as we'll be right back, only present tense. That was Phil Giraldi, past tense, just a second ago. Yeah, I'm terrible at these hard breaks. Well, I don't want to stop talking or stop interviewing. I'd like to. Yeah, me and the hard breaks, we're not friends. Me and the hard breaks, we're foes. Like the war party and truth. Sense. All right. Hey, more police state news. I got so much freaking police state news. Maybe I should talk about the Iran deal. Let me tell you about the Iran deal real quick. Hope this doesn't take a whole segment. Well, I just cursed it. Let me tell you about the Iran deal. I want to do this in a way where you can pretty goddang much glom on to what I'm telling you here and understand it. Maybe go read a couple of things and then go forth and tell truth to people on your own. Iran is already safeguarded by the IAEA. All of their nuclear material is safeguarded. And the reason why it's safeguarded is because they have a safeguards agreement with the IAEA. And the reason that Iran has a safeguards agreement with the IAEA, that's the International Atomic Energy Agency, the reason they have a safeguards agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency is because they're members of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And as a non-nuclear weapon state member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, they are bound to not make nuclear weapons and not to acquire them by hook or crook, and they are bound to have a safeguards agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency that would allow the IAEA to safeguard their nuclear material, which is exactly what they have done for so many years, since the very earliest days of them spinning a single centrifuge for research purposes. And they've never been found in violation of their safeguards agreement. They've never been found to be in violation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. So the negotiation now is to extra double super lucky happy wish ensure and safeguard their nuclear material more than before. So for Dick Cheney and other avowed liars to say, and I can't believe he actually said this, maybe he misspoke. I mean, maybe he didn't mean to lie this gratuitously. But he said, this is Obama giving. He really said this. This is Obama giving Iran nuclear weapons. Are you kidding me? For them to now have their program double lucky, happy, super wish, insured with, you know, exponential degrees beyond how they were ever safeguarded under the Cheney years? Well, that's just not true. And all the experts and people who look at this from the very beginning have said, hey, wow, man, they're really bending over backwards further than we thought. Everybody was pleasantly surprised at how far they're willing to go. The only reason it was surprising, really, was if you accepted the premise that they were really wanting to have nuclear weapons. But if you understood the truth, that that was always a bunch of crap, then there's no surprise at all, really. I mean, to me, it was a little bit of a surprise, but only in the sense of how much they were overtly compromising in what might be considered an embarrassing way. Like, they're really giving in to Uncle Sam a lot in a way that could be bad domestic politics. That's the only consideration that I had that of surprise. But as far as them giving up their nuclear capacity to whatever degree, for example, converting their Iraq facility from a heavy water facility to a light water facility, meh, why not? Again, it's a pretty heavy compromise for domestic political consumption in Iran. But what do they care? They never had a program or a plan, obviously, to take the waste from the Iraq plant and reprocess it into nuclear weapons fuel in the first place. Only paranoid lunatics and liars ever claimed so. And so, really, all the hype that you've heard is just hype. As long as a single centrifuge spins in Iran, you're supposed to be terrified. But that's just hype by liars who would have you basically confess that you don't know about nuclear technology, so you'll cede your decision-making to somebody on the issue. Why not to scaremongers? Hey, listen, you can't afford to side with the anti-war guy, because what if he's wrong and we all die? Like Frank Gaffney and the Center for Security Policy say, oh, the Iranians, they could take one nuclear weapon and then they could float it on a barge all the way to America's East Coast, and then they could shoot it into the air over America and turn out all of our electric things forever. All of them. And then we would all die. They even say this, really, that 90% of Americans would die in the massive starvation. What nonsense. You ever notice people trying to scare you into war are always lying to you? It seems like they would try to be a little closer to the truth sometimes so that it wouldn't be so blatant. What liars they are. But as Gordon Prather says, hey, if a uranium fission bomb is close enough to you to turn out your lights, a loss of electricity is the least of your problems, pal. It's going to be the explosion of your body that's going to be the biggest thing. The nothing left of you to bury because the ashes are incinerated to problem that you face. And the whole electromagnetic pulse, it is a real phenomenon of thermonuclear weapons detonated above the ionosphere, which is a whole other thing from a simple gun-type uranium or even implosion uranium or plutonium fission bomb, which Iran could never sail to America in a million years, which they don't even have and aren't even making. And really, it would have to be not just a thermonuke, but an enhanced radiation device, a.k.a. a neutron bomb. What that really means is it's meant to release most of its energy as radiation rather than heat. So the chain reaction is shorter. It's not compressed for as long. Has a thinner shell around it, basically. And so anyway, the only countries that could possibly do that to the United States would be Russia and maybe Britain. And I guess possibly China. But I don't think anybody has accused them of having enhanced radiation devices. Just theoretically, they could make one. But then, more bang for your buck if you just take out LA. If that's your thing, China. Which I'm not recommending it, I'm just saying. And it would take a hell of a lot more than one to turn out all the lights in America. It would take many, probably hundreds and hundreds. And even then, there's no reason to think that it would short, that it would be capable of shorting and destroying every circuit or anything like that. Certainly not hardened military devices and whatever. And the whole thing is just scaremongering nonsense. That's Frank Gaffney. But you'd be amazed how many people believe that stuff and pass that around, the Iranian plot to turn out all our lights and starve us all to death and this kind of thing. That's crazy, I tells you. Anyway, so the Iran deal is this. The Iran deal is putting to bed, should be, putting to bed the outstanding fake issue. Iran's nuclear program is no threat to the United States, never was. It's not a threat to Israel either, so says Israeli Mossad, and really Netanyahu admits it too when he's talking with Jeffrey Goldberg. And anyway, I'm against any alliance with Iran, but I'm certainly for ending the Cold War against them. They had the right to overthrow the Shah anyway. They didn't have the right to take the hostages, but anyway, big deal, and it was 40 years ago, and so quit crying. You've been lied to by everybody who hates them so much. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, guys, welcome back. So, yeah, I like hearing from conservatives like Phil Giraldi on Christianity and war. Not necessarily the religion, but the factions. People confusing the government for their messiah all the time kind of pisses me off. Anyway. So, I did just claim that Netanyahu admits that Iran is no nuclear threat. And so I just figured, well, I'll prove that to you here. Check it out. It's in Haaretz. Netanyahu told his cabinet, our biggest fear is that Iran will honor the nuclear deal. He says the greatest concern is we'll not be able to catch them cheating because they won't cheat. They will keep to every letter in the agreement. Netanyahu said, it will be impossible to catch them cheating simply because they will not. Said Netanyahu. So the problem is, after 15 more years of them not making nuclear weapons, then everyone's guard will be down. And then they'll do something really scary, like leave the non-proliferation treaty and start making nuclear weapons. Really? That's all they've got left. The leader of the war party, that's his last argument. Nothing but a bunch of crap. And that doesn't mean that I think that America should be Iran's air force in Iraq or in Syria. or in Yemen. But not that we're Iran's Air Force in Yemen. We're Al-Qaeda's Air Force in Yemen. Didn't want to confuse that. But anyway, I'm not saying we should be on either or any side of the civil war over there, but we should certainly not be continually threatening Iran and picking a fight with them over their perfectly safeguarded civilian nuclear program. Anyway, back to police state stuff, because I want to talk about this police state stuff some more. I think I got interrupted by the heartbreak, and I didn't really get to talk about this enough. Yeah, I did. So here's my problem here. In the Jeffrey Sterling case, we already talked about the disparity between Jeffrey Sterling's probable sentencing compared to David Petraeus, who's much more guilty of leaking secrets. And anyway, the prosecution in the Jeffrey Sterling CIA whistleblower case is that, quote, the prosecution, most importantly for sentencing disparity purposes, the defendant exercised his right to a jury trial. And for that, the government argues, writes Marcy Wheeler, he should get a much harsher punishment. This is also a thing that I saw in the ranting and raving of this judge in Florida, right, who sentenced the government teachers who had faked the results of their tests, of the school tests, to years in prison, some of them, or one of them at least, and many months for others. And he attacked them for not taking the plea deal. Take the plea deal. And then if you have the temerity to demand a jury trial or even a trial at all, then they get to punish you more. And not just, you know, kind of secretly because they hate you and they get revenge and do what they want with you, but they can officially cite insisting on a jury trial as a reason why you had ought to have a longer sentence. What in the hell is that? Who ever heard of that? Did you know they could do that? Can they do that? I mean, why the hell not, right? I don't know. Is there a Supreme Court case that says go ahead? If someone wastes the court's time by trying to plead not guilty, but then, hey, if they're convicted anyway, whether they did it or not, whether the law is just or not, constitutional or not. But if they try to get away with it by pleading not guilty, that ought to be cause for further punishment. Why not charge them with perjury if they get on the stand and try to say it wasn't me? If they're convicted anyway, that's proof enough that what they said wasn't true, right? Why not add that on? And make them pay the prosecution's costs for bringing the case against them, too. And you know what? Why should they have the right to testify on their own behalf anyway? My God, man. It's like I'm living in an episode of The Outer Limits. Your Honor, we especially think that since this guy tried to plead not guilty, that he should get an extra few years for that. Wow, man. I did not know that this was a thing. What, am I an idiot or something? Or is this kind of new? Or what is the deal? Somebody tweet me. You're blowing my mind here. What's left of my brain? Anyway, Radley Balco has a thing at the Washington Post. The drug war marches on. Lady got her kid taken away for no reason at all. Then you have the informants. Oh, they're infiltrating rich college kids. Actually, you know, maybe that'll lead to a little bit of political backlash if you're looking for a silver lining, not like it makes it okay or anything. And plenty of asset forfeiture still continuing on, and yeah, drug war. It's one of the most corrupt parts of our entire society. of our entire government, too. As deadline nears, it's possible, they're saying, that Rand Paul and some friends in the Senate might halt the 215 program under the Patriot Act, Section 215. Let me know when it happens. We'll see. Again, in case you missed it, huge, massive FBI scandal of bearing false witness against innocent people, pretending that they had real science behind their claims that hair samples proved guilt in a way that they said, oh yeah, no, I have the DNA test. Meanwhile, it was a dog's hair in one of these. For decades. And now here's the thing about this. Okay, this is a huge story. This is a huge story, but wait a minute. Go back 15 years. Just imagine who you were, where you were, pick a setting from 15 years ago. And what you're supposed to believe about FBI scientists from the vaunted FBI crime lab. I bet you, let's try to search vaunted. Vaunted FBI crime lab. In quotes here. Let me see how many results I get. 2,100. That's pretty good. The vaunted FBI crime lab. And I know probably some of those results are sarcastic, but not mostly. You know, if TV had it their way, which they do, you would believe that if an FBI crime lab employee says a thing, then that's it. It's a fact. It's true. It's as simple as that. You can't argue with the science. And so you have people put away on one hair. Well, how do you explain the one hair? Well, how about the scientist is a lying pig hack who's bearing false witness in exchange for money? How about that for an explanation? This is America. What did you think this was, a TV show? Tune in to the next episode of CSI Crime Lab Experts. Did I mention? I meant to mention yesterday on the show, but I don't think I got to it. Somebody sent me a tweet that said, I've been on three juries. And in all three, I had to argue with the rest of the jury that no, the government did not make a case here. Sorry. They were all, in other words, in tweet form, they were all ready to go ahead and convict just because the government said so. That's it. If he didn't do it, why are we even here? He must have done it. Why did the cops get him? Why would the prosecutor go along with the cops and even bringing him to trial? That alone says he is presumed guilty. Why should we let him go? And they didn't hear any good reason to let him go. And this guy had to say, wait, just a minute here. They didn't even make a case here. That's no case at all. Hashtag, people want to believe. I think he's paraphrasing me. I'm always quoting Alan Box saying that. People want to believe. Come on. If Saddam didn't do 9/11, then why are we invading Iraq then, dummy? Of course he did it, or else why would we be invading? It must be. Anyway, and again, more people murdered by cops than I could possibly list for you. Go to Cop Block. Various cop blocks have the lists for you there. Again, check out Roger Charles on OKC at Who, What, Why.